My guest today is a great character actor, Louis Lombardi. You've seen him in such films as Usual Suspects, Natural Born Killers, The Sopranos, Entourage, and scores of other films. He was born and raised in the streets of the Bronx, and he has a great long shot story. He's also an entrepreneur. He's got his own line of Italian food, sauces, but his greatest gift is his personality. You cannot not fall in love with this guy. Got a beautiful smile, great attitude. The guy's just got an infectious personality. I started talking to him in the pregame, and I said, okay, this is going to be good. I know where this is going to go. This is the guy you want to sit next to 3 o'clock in the morning at a deli and having a conversation with a bunch of other guys. Here is Louis Lombardi.
I'm here with Louis Lombardi, and this conversation is already going the way I thought it was going to go in the pregame. Louis, you're from the Bronx. My whole family's from New York. I told you that before we started talking, my dad's from Brooklyn, my stepdad's from the Bronx, and my mom's from Manhattan. You're from the Bronx. I can see how this is going to go. You've been working as an actor since 1993, and also what piqued my interest is that you got a line of your own pasta and pasta sauce and food stuff,
yeah.
Right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, because I want to get into all that.
Okay.
I want to get into all that, but what I want to do is I want to talk about little Louis when growing up in the Bronx and get the whole origin of you. You grew up in the Bronx. What did your dad do?
Well, my dad died when I was like 2 years old. So my mother's single mom brought up me and my brother.
Wow.
And in my neighborhood in the Bronx, you know, it's kind of funny because I'm actually doing a TV show now with MGM based on my life growing up in the Bronx.
No kidding.
Yeah, I got a call with the showrunner at 3 o'clock. You know, we've been developing the pitch so we can go out and pitch it to like FX, Amazon, everything in the next 3 weeks. You know, the show is kind of like, it's a, you know, growing up in my neighborhood, none of us went to school. None of us had fathers. You know, there was like a bunch of kids. So most of my friends did 25 years in prison. My grandfather did 30 years straight in prison.
What'd he do?
He just, you know, gangster, you know, like a big drug dealer in New York. And most people I know, that's what you did in New York growing up. Nobody really.
Did you visit him in jail while
I
was there?
Since I was 5 years old, Lewisburg, Allenwood, Otisville, all the prisons in the country I've been to. Every federal
prison. My dad was in Wayside for 4 months. I visited him there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, I like that.
$20. You know, because he's all, I can't take any more than $20, but that's like gold out here, the $20 bill.
Where's Wayside?
Wayside's up on the I-5 freeway. He did a white-collar crime. He did something called check kiting. He wrote some bad checks.
Yeah, so that's what my show is about all these guys I grew up with, all my friends. You know, I want to always be an actor. I've been acting since I'm 13. So I go back 30 years, not just 28 in L.A., but I've been doing this stuff as a kid. And when I would do it in the Bronx, all of us were just hustlers. That's all we were. It was all about money. How do you hustle? That's what I was just telling you 5 minutes ago. It didn't matter what race, creed, color you were. Everybody was family. You know, every neighborhood was another dollar. So we would hustle in every neighborhood. You know, we were kids, like 15, 16, 17 years old. None of us had dads. None of us went to school. We'd stay on the streets all night. You know, we formed this kind of little bond of a crew of guys. And unfortunately, as everybody got older, they got greedy and they just started dealing with everyone. Money became the focus and not friendships anymore. And most of them got caught up in 1991, too. Like 46 of my friends and family got arrested. And I left for L.A. I moved to L.A. because I always wanted to be an actor. I used to do NYU films. So when I was growing up, little Louis was 13. I have headshots from 13. What I would do is, I don't know if you're familiar with Backstage. It was a magazine, a newspaper.
Yeah, I remember Backstage.
So I would run to
Dramalog.
You dated us. You just dated us, bro. So anyway. Right, so I would run to the store once every Thursday at 12 o'clock when they had the first shipment of Backstage. I would fill out all the pay and send all my stuff out. And I did that for years. And how I did it, I didn't want to go to school ever. I didn't really go to regular school. And I didn't want to go to film school or acting school. And I didn't have the money to go to NYU, actually. You know, it was like 50, 60 grand a year then. Oh, yeah. Right? So what I did was I would audition as an actor to NYU films. So I would get free acting. Then I would get free filmmaking. And I did 10, 15 NYU films. And everyone started passing me around as an actor because it would be fun. And that's how my beginning was I would just audition for NYU films and independent New York films. And I ended up doing a bunch of them. And the first person I met in Hollywood was Oliver Stone. And he was an NYU graduate.
Wow. What year did you meet him?
93.
So, okay. So this is after he did Platoon in 86.
Oh, yeah. Wait. So this is how my career kind of started. I used to do all these NYU films as an actor, learn how to make movies. So I did this independent film in 90. It was an independent film, and Mira Savino was casting it. Now, remember, she was no one. Her dad put in $15,000 to be a co-producer. She was casting the movie, but she was no one. She was just a casting associate, right?
But Goodfellas came out in 90, and Sorvino had a nice name for himself there.
Yeah, so she was part of this film. It was called Amongst Friends, about Jewish gangsters in Long Island. The guy who did it was a Jewish director-writer from Long Island, and he made this gangster film about Jewish gangsters, and it was, the film was like, it's still like iconic, like it's still, a, you know, the guy did what also did Ballers, Entourage, you know, he did all these massive projects. So, but we all started together. We did this film, Mira cast me in this film, 91, just say, and we shot the film in 91, 92. Now, back then, Sundance was nothing, you know, it was a film festival. Not nothing, it was a prestigious film festival. It was like, wow, you got a film, like, you know, all these great filmmakers coming out of there, really filmmakers. So we shoot the film in 91, all my buddies get arrested late 91, 92, right? 46 dudes. Now I'm in the Bronx, and I'm going, oh my God, like, you know, this is incredible. All these,
what'd they get arrested for?
Drug dealing.
There were a lot of them on the same deal?
Everyone, no, just dealing with everyone through the name. Went from just kids to like a massive drug ring. That's what the show's about.
It was a raid, okay.
Yeah, but I knew I'm the one who put everyone together because when I was a kid growing up, I lived in different neighborhoods. I lived in so many different neighborhoods in the Bronx. I would go, you know, my mother moved a lot before I was 10, 11, in like 8, 9 places. So I would move a lot. So I was always a friendly guy. So I used to make friends with each group of neighborhoods. This is what I was trying to explain to you earlier. Like, you see these guys, they fight in the neighborhoods. My belief was, why are we fighting? You can make money. Your network is big. And no matter what content you're selling, no matter what your product you're selling, it's still a network, right? It don't matter. So what I did was, I lived in this neighborhood, that neighborhood. So when I finally settled in the neighborhood that my mom is still there 42 years in this one apartment, we're still in that same apartment. We moved in when I was 12, right? It turns out that, you know, all these neighborhoods, I accumulated crews of dudes. When I finally settled with these four guys that my show's about, I was like, wow, you know, I knew this guy from, and everybody would be like, let's fight this guy. Let, when no one in bars, every neighborhood wants to fight each other. All these, hey, let's fuck you. You're from the Bronx. You're from Frog's Neck. You're from country. You're from there. Fuck you. And they fight. And I'd be like, why are we doing this? So I started pulling everyone in. It started out for sports because I played football a lot. That was my passion for 10 years. I played offensive guard. So I played in semi-pro leagues. And I wasn't even old enough. I was illegally on the teams. We all started enterprising, you know? So I've been bringing all these guys in these groups from these neighborhoods. And I started making a bond of, well, like, five guys from this neighborhood. You know, everybody, like I said, I was telling you earlier, everybody wanted to fight through these neighbors. Everybody's just, you know, this ego thing. You know, as kids, everybody's drinking, they want to fight. I started going, you know, this guy didn't like this guy. I was like, well, this guy can do this. He knows 30 guys in this neighborhood. This guy knows 10 guys. This guy. So I started pulling all these groups of dudes in from his neighborhoods, right? And before you know it, there was 20, 30 guys hanging out with us every night. So as kids, we started going, hey, maybe we could sell a quarter pound of weed and this. And it turned out to be a massive thing because so many neighborhoods came in and everybody made friends instead of fight with each other. And it turned out to be 30, 40 dudes that started hanging out. And that's what happened. And so many people got arrested. So I always wanted to be an actor. So I told you my NYU things, right?
Yeah.
And they would make fun of me. You want to be an actor? What the hell is an actor? I go, shut the fuck up. Well, what do you want to be an actor? What is an actor? What is it? And I would bring into the social clubs where we hung out. You know what a social club is?
Oh, yeah, of course I know, yeah.
So I would go into social clubs, right? And I would put the VHS, I sound like my mother. I would put the VHS
tape in. The VHS. Now you're really dating yourself.
Exactly. So I would put the VHS tapes in. They'd be like, what is this? I'd be like, that's my student film. I just was in, you know, Syracuse, Ithaca, and I used to travel with these kids and do the film. And they'd be like, what is that? Yo, what's wrong with you? You want to be a Hollywood asshole? They would rebuke, and I'd be like, what? You moron idiots, you know? I want to be an actor. I want to do something, not just be a fucking gangster. And turns out that they all got arrested, and I followed my dream. So yeah. The film Mira Savino cast me in. Everybody got arrested, 91, 92. I was sitting in the Bronx by myself. I did this film. The director calls and goes, hey, our film is at Sundance. Why don't you come? Everybody's going to come. We're going to drive from New York. We're all going to go together as a team. And when Sundance was a real film festival.
Yeah.
You know, so we're like, okay, I had nothing. I had $5,000 left. I had a car that I bought. I was paying $400 a month on that, a max. And, you know,
you drove from New York to Utah?
Oh, I drove across country 4 or 5 times. I did it alone. I went down south. I took the 10 one time and then went up from Florida. I went the middle of the country, 40 east, west. I did that. I love driving. I drive everywhere. I just drove to Utah last week for Christmas. I drive to Utah. So I got my car. I drove from, I said, fuck it, there's none here. Right? Everybody's in jail. Everybody's miserable. Everybody's... So I got my car. I took whatever little money I had left. I packed up my stuff. And I drove from L.A. to Venice. I mean, New York, the Bronx, to Venice Beach. My buddy had a house there. Yeah. My first stop was Venice Beach when it was beautiful. 91, 93. I was like, this is beautiful. I love it here. And that's why I saw the gangbangers fighting every night. I was like, why? Like, my mentality was, let's unite. Like, I was almost going to go that's out there and go, like I did in the Bronx. And then I said... Mind your business, you know?
And where do you think that came from? Where does that entrepreneurial networking come from? Dad, mom, or, you know, grandfather?
Just me. I was always a hustler. I always believed that everything is a network. It don't matter what you're doing.
Yeah.
It don't matter what business you're in, but everything is a network, correct?
The number one word, I was just telling somebody else the other day, the number one word I grew up with, my dad, who's from spitting image of De Niro, mannerisms, everything, like De Niro and Elvis. Just imagine De Niro saying, son, you got to do the hustle bustle. When I was 5 years old, I hear that word, be a hustler, was a, right. was a good thing. You meant to give 100%, meant that you were...
Never quit.
You were not lazy.
Right, right. Your dad's 1,000%. Always hustle. Oh, I hustle every day of my life, even till today.
Yeah.
You know, and that's always been embedded in my mind. I got that from our street crews. You know, you don't hustle, you don't make a dollar. You don't get shit.
That's right.
And if you're the big dog in the room and you hustle, you get everything.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so I was always fortunate enough to be that side of the big dude in the room going, all right, I know all these people. I know how to do it. I know how to do it. So I was entrepreneurial at 4, 5, 10 years old. My mom's boyfriend owned a shoe shine repair shop. He was from Italy. You know, like, the, you remember those things where you're going to get your shoes fixed? Well, yeah. The shoe repair shops.
They used to have those. They still have shoe repair shops, right?
I don't know, but that was where I grew up inside this shoe repair shop. So I would go down when I was like 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. I would take the bus, Manhattan Express, down to the district where you can buy everything wholesale. And I would buy.
You went from the Bronx down to Manhattan.
On the Manhattan Express bus.
Yeah.
You're familiar with that. It's like the fancy bus. Yeah. So I would take that down and I would go to these stores and I would buy like little knickknacks and things to sell in his store. And I would put up little stands. This is 7, 8 years old.
Yeah,
and I would put up keychains, necklace, just whatever I would bought wholesale, and I would sell them in his store. He had a store, and I would put up a stand. People would buy it as they came in. Oh, I'll take one of these, a little Rubik's Cube keychain, and, you know, stuff. So I did that, like, as I was a kid. I always was into entrepreneurial stuff. I was like, I want to do more. I don't want to just, you know, this is a kid now, 7, 8 years old.
You were 8 years old.
Yeah, and I would take the bus by myself, bro. I never went to school. Even that's how I got into movies, because my mother would give us $5 a day, me and my brother. We would split it. He would run off and go get crazy out with his buddies, and I would go to the movies. I would take the train to Parkchester, and I would go see a movie all the time. I didn't went to school. So that was my, like, fantasy was movies. I would go to the movies all the time by myself as a kid. And then I would go, like I said, go on the weekends, go down to Manhattan, go buy knickknacks and sell them in the store. So that was my life. It wasn't school like most kids at 10, 12 years old, or even 8, 9.
What's the highest grade you got up to?
Probably like 7th grade.
See, this is a New York story. My dad was homeless. He had parents, but they put him in an orphanage because they couldn't afford him. 8 years old. Run in Midtown. He was growing up on, this is when he lived on 2nd and St. Mark's on Lower East Side. He slept in the alleyway for months until they said, fine, you can sleep on the couch at your grandmother's. He worked at 8 years old at a watch company, and he started his first business selling nylon stockings. But this is a New York story. You're young. That's an older generation. That's pretty young for a newer generation.
Yeah, everything in my life was always hustle. And you know what? I'm going to tell you something. It was actually a blessing that I had the struggle I had like that growing up, because what happened was when I moved to Hollywood, Hollywood's a dog struggle, worse than the streets. But I was so used to it that I lived in a house with 4 or 5 dudes when I got out here. You know, I would come to my house and I would cook for everyone back then. and everyone would come out. It's like Michael Rapaport, the House of Pain, Leonardo DiCaprio. All these people.
I know Danny from House of Pain, and I used to be friends with Eric Everlast too.
Yeah, and all these guys would just come to this house I had where we had all these buddies and everybody, we would cook all the time. I still have videos on the VHS cassette, the tapes, right?
What were you cooking for these guys? Yeah. What were you cooking?
Oh, I make every pasta and just everything. I cook everything. I don't just cook Italian food. I make Mexican food. I make sushi. I make Chinese food in my house. Okay. I make everything. Yeah, I love it. Now, you know, even now, but I used to cook for. So what happened was these guys didn't know how to cook. So I would be like, remember in Goodfellas in the prison? You need this, you need this. So all these dudes would be like, hey, if I buy food, would you cook it for me and we freeze it for the week? Because that's what I would eat. And I started teaching all these guys in the house how to cook. When I had
like Colmenza.
Exactly what it was.
Come over here, Michael. Let me show you how to cook.
100%. It was Clemenza. You know, and they'd be like, all the guys would be around me in the kitchen. I'd be like, this is how you make the tomatoes. This is how you. And they would put it in Tupperwares, and that's what they would eat all week instead of going out and eating fast food. So I taught this group of dudes how to cook. You know, when I first got out here, it was like Clemenza, I mean, like that, exactly. Yeah. And so when we got to Hollywood, it was such a dogfight. I mean, everyone was competition. Everyone back. It was a tough thing. And all these people I was with were like from Long Island, from Manhattan. And they were kind of like Strasburg graduates. But they didn't have the mental toughness of being rejected, of hustling, hustle. And when you wake up to when you go to bed, not like when you're doing your audition. I'm a hustler from when I wake up at whatever time I'm doing stuff. Even now, till today, I've always done it. I don't want to sit idle. I'm always doing something. So I would hustle. They could not take the mental exhaustion that Hollywood gave them. Me, it was like, okay, I'm not going to jail. I have no one chasing me with a gun. I go to these auditions. I'm going to auditions. What are they going to do? Throw me out? I'm not going to get killed. I don't have any threat. So I took it as, I'm great. That street life bred me for this tough mentality business. In my favor, because all of that hardship I had growing up paid off in my long-lasting career, which I've been doing this in L.A. for 28 years. And I've been, luckily, knock on wood, I've had a sick, great career. You know?
Very prolific since 1993. What I want to know is, let's get started on something here. What was the first big role that really, first big job, you said, holy shit, this is going to work?
Well, I'm going to tell you.
Yeah.
I drove to L.A., from the Bronx to Venice, me and Mira Savino got in a car, drove to Sundance. After I got to L.A. and Venice, remember I told you I drove from Bronx to Venice. I get in my car a week later with Mira Savino, and we drive to Park City, to Utah, to the Sundance Film Festival, 1993. Our film, Among Friends.
93.
Yeah.
I was there in 93. I did a gambling casino for Paul Thomas Anderson's Heart 8 film.
I think I might have been in the casino thing.
Yeah, with John C. Reilly's condo.
Yes. Well, I didn't go. So our film was like the big hit there.
Yeah.
I remember there was a casino there. Our group of filmmakers was Brian Singer, Jennifer Lynch, Robert Rodriguez, the guy Rob that I did the movie Among Friends with. So our film blew up at Sundance. Okay, I'm in the Bronx dealing with drug dealers and gangsters. I drive to L.A. and I drive to Utah. Now I'm dealing with massive filmmakers at the Sundance Film. And we were God. People loved us. I got an agent immediately from there. Our film was like, oh, my God, you know, this film is the next Mean Streets. It's the next Goodfellas. It was kind of that, you know, the Jewish gangster film from Long Island, which was great. I mean, still today, it's iconic. Like, and I come back to L.A. after Sundance. And Rob, the director, is like, hey, bro, I got a meeting with Oliver Stone because he was hot. He had a deal at Universal. And he's like, I got a meeting with Oliver Stone. Would you drive me to Santa Monica? And he was in Hollywood. I'm like, sure. Because growing up, I wanted to make films like Oliver Stone. I don't care as much as Scorsese or Coppola. As an Italian-American, I was more interested in Oliver Stone films.
Okay.
I loved Oliver. He was my, growing up, you know, I read his book. He was like my... That's what I want to make films like that real gritty, hard edge film. My films, when I direct, are going to reflect Oliver Stone projects, not Scorsese and Coppola's. Now, I get to L.A. and Rob's like, can you drive me to meet Oliver? I'm like, are you kidding? This is like my film idol. Like, this is what I want to be like. Like, this is the film that I want to be like. I go to meet him. I'm in the room. I go there and I'm like, so Rob's talking to him. Rob's like, yeah, I'm going to make movies. And Oliver's like, you make anything you want to the guy. And I'm just sitting there in the room. Like watching this dude going, oh, how surreal is this? My idol, my first week in Hollywood, I'm sitting in this room with him, right? That's Oliver crazy. Stone. After the meeting, he looks at me, Oliver, and he's like, hey, man, he goes, I love you in this movie amongst friends. He goes, you know what? I'm going to put you in my next movie. I love your look. I was like, holy shit. They're going, okay, this is for real. This is, remember, I'm in Hollywood a week now.
That doesn't happen.
No. So I had no union card, nothing. I just showed up. I did an independent film to Hollywood. So he's like, I love your look. I'm going to put you in my next movie. I was like, okay. Next movie turned out to be Natural Born Killers. A week later, he calls me in again. He's like, come on into the meeting. Come on in. We have a meeting up here. I'm like, okay, because I lived right in Santa Monica. So I go to his office. I walk in the door, but no bullshit, dude. I walk in. Who's sitting there? Robert Downey Jr., Tommy Lee Jones, Woody Harrelson, Juliet Lewis, Tom Sizemore, Don Murphy, and Jane Hampshire. They're the producers of Natural Born Killers and all this crew. And I walk in. I'm like, now remember, I'm a kid watching these people a week ago.
Yeah.
Now I'm in the room with them, and they're casting people, and they're using me. I'm sitting with them on a chair, casting people for my partner on the movie, and they're coming in. I'm no union card. I don't know anyone. All of them were just like, hey, Louis, welcome to the thing. And I'm like, holy shit, this is surreal. This was my initiation into Hollywood. And I'm sitting there going, oh my, and they're bringing in these legendary character actors, people that I watched a week ago. Never mind 10 years ago, coming in and auditioning to play my partner in Natural Born Killers. I was like, and Oliver was like, you like this guy, Louis? And I'm like, yeah, I like him. He's like, no, you can't like everyone. Because I just was like, I love these guys. So anyway, they ended up casting a guy named Marshall Bell. He's a famous actor. He was in a million movies. If you type it, he would be like, no, that guy is great. So he was kind of like,
gotta put the name to the face.
Oh, you ever see Twins, the killer, the guy with the weird face? His wife is a massive production thing for Warren Beatty, production designer. Anyway, if you type him, it would be like that guy.
Yeah.
Long story short, they end up pairing me up with this guy. And I end up making friends with him until today. We're buddies. He's like, he's way older. He's like 80, but he was like my mentor. Like I didn't have any money when I was in this movie. You know, I was just this kid doing this, and he would show me the ropes. Here you go, Louis. Here's a couple of hundred in case you need money. He would go, hey, this is what you do on set. This kind of showed me the ropes, this guy, Marshall Bell. Anyway, long story short, Oliver hires me. I get a plane to, I'm sitting with him a week later with all these major stars in this room. I'm part of them now. He put me in with them. It was amazing. Like one of my life's memories that I will never forget. Now you have an idol. You look at him, and all of a sudden you're a week in your way you want to be. You're with this guy who you wanted to make films like, and now he's being great to me. Like you know, people go, Oliver's nuts, but to me he was amazing. He end up is. I get a ticket to Chicago that summer. I'm there for 3 months with them. They're like, Oliver, don't know how long you're going to be there. You have no script. He's just going to tell you what to say. My agents were like, he loves you. I was like, really? Flies me out. No, nothing. I just show up to Chicago. I'm in the room, in a hotel room next, partying with Oliver Stone, Woody Harrelson, Robert Downey, the whole team, Claudia Schiffer and all her model friends. Peter Gabriel's in the room playing piano. And Robert Downey. Room. I walk in, I'm like, they're like, Louis. I'm like, Louis, yay. So I ended up making great friends with Downey, and I ended up staying with him. He was the sweetest, nicest person I've ever met, worked with, and he had this big room, and we would have parties in, and like I said, old Claudia Schiffer and all her crew. This was like in 91 when they were all the top people. Yeah. Peter Gabriel, Robert Downey had a piano put in his room, so when we have the parties, all these people would come up and play piano, and I'm like, well, this is cool, and I stood with him all the time, and that was my initiation into Hollywood. So I didn't have a union card, so when I did Natural Born Killers, they paid for my union card. That's how I got my union card, so Oliver Stone.
You got tapped Hartley by your first job within 1 week.
By an idol that I've been wanting to be like for 10 years in the Bronx.
That's even better than I thought it was going to be. That's amazing. I can't believe that.
And then after I came back from Natural Born Killers, you know, everybody was like, oh, my God, you know, how Hollywood works. You got hired by who? So in that time, I ended up getting hired by Tim Burton, Ivan Reitman, John Landis, Bryan Singer. I ended up doing so many movies back to back to back to back. And I did, like, in the first 5 years, I probably did 25 movies, big movies, like with all those directors. So, again, what happened was I learned how to direct and make movies for free for my NYU years. Now I'm learning to make movies again, but by the biggest directors in the world, the most famous directors, and I learned how to act by all these great actors I worked with. I mean, my first year or two, I worked with Johnny Depp, Robert Downey, that whole crew from Natural Born Killers. I worked with Eddie Murphy in Beverly Hills. These are guys that I showed up and I just started immediately working with. But my thing, what I do is I watch, I learn. Again, everything is a business to me. The better you are, you know, everything is passion, passion, passion. And once you get in the door with your passion, knowledge carries you the rest of the way. So I always read. I always learn. I'm always on sets learning. I don't care how. Even now, I show up. I go, why do you put that lens? Why do you do this? People love it. I made friends with Alonzo, the big famous DP, when I did Deuces Wild for Scorsese. The guy Alonzo, he passed away. He did a lot of me. He was like a famous cinematographer. And he took me in. He'd be like, this is how you do this. Because I would always ask questions. And now today, it's paying off because I've written and directed movies. And I've learned from these great, amazing people. Bob Richardson, you know who that is? Robert Richardson?
Yeah, sure.
Well, he did Natural Born Killer.
Yeah, he's great with his light, that bright light that he's always like. He did Casino also, didn't he? Bob Richardson did Casino.
Yeah, and he did Natural Born Killers. He did the light too, that light stuff that they did in all those movies.
Yeah,
he did. So I ended up getting my film education from 93, a real serious film education from the top directors, writers, and actors that I got to work with, and it kind of built my knowledge. And in 1997, I wrote, directed, and started my first film, and a lot of great people were in it. I shot it all at the Roxbury nightclub on Sunset Boulevard. My buddy owned it. He let me have the run of the place. He gave me the money to do it. And
Wait. Ely Samra was one of the owners. Who was the other one?
But the real owner was Edward Nejas.
Okay.
My buddy's dad. That was
I remember Josh Feld, and then there was Ely Samra.
Well, that was Nejas. Edward was the real owner. He was Ely's uncle.
Okay.
And Ely, I had my office in Ely's building for years. I used to hang out with Ely. I used to go to his house. He used to have a house on Laurel County. I would sit there with him, T. Carrera. He was nice. He's a little loose-bolt, crazy guy.
Yeah.
Crazy motherfucker. But he kind of liked me and took care of me as well, you know. And I had my office in his office. But the whole thing was his uncle was the owner of everything.
Got it.
He was the money guy.
I'm dying to find this out. When you start, this is the save the cat question. You finally get what you wanted. Did you ever be careful what you wanted? Because when you first started getting all this stuff, was there something that went a little, you know, did you get a little crazy a little bit? Or, you know, sometimes that happens.
No, I was on the streets. You couldn't get any more crazier. So I've come from a place that, okay, I've always had an identity. Most people come to LA to get an acting. That acting is there. I'm famous and I can do what I want. I was always famous in New York. You know, my kind of family was kind of big in whatever world. I was always like in the forefront. Like, well, we could do anything when I was in New York. I was always fortunate, knock on wood, to be able to go to any place, any club, anywhere, no line, by myself with sweatpants on. So I've always had that blessing of the power of that world.
Yeah.
I was on the top, so I was able to do everything. I never was like attention. So when I moved to Hollywood, when I became famous, I was already famous in New York.
Yeah.
You know, like we were already famous. We could already did whatever we wanted. So when I moved to LA and I got all the success, it was like, same shit to me. I appreciated it. You know, I was like, this is great. This is what I love doing. This is what I've been doing my whole life. This is what I want to do. So I just, when I got here, it wasn't like, oh, I got this. I'm going to go do it. No, it was more like, okay, this is great. But it wasn't like I was like doing crazy stuff. I mean, I always like to have fun and go out and party and have a great time. I've always done that even in the Bronx. When I got out here, I did that, but I did it with massive people. Like I would be at people's house. You'd be like, whoa, you know. And to me, it was like, I didn't care who you were because I was with people way bigger than you in New York who you couldn't even walk in the rooms with. I was there with my family, you know, kind of vibe.
Yeah.
So I've always had that sense of power and identity. I didn't really need it when I got to Hollywood. That's why I guess I succeeded because I wasn't desperate. I wasn't, and I go to auditions and go, like I told you, I'm not going to get killed. I don't give a fuck. I'm just like you. You're not better than me because you're across from me. That was my mentality. I don't give a fuck who you are. You don't hire me, don't hire me. I don't care. That was always my mentality. I never was like, and I was with actors. Like, oh my God, I'm waiting by the phone. I'm like, dude, chill out.
Yeah.
And they were like, no, you don't do that. And like, okay. And they all of them fell off. And 28 years later, I'm still doing it. I'm just in the Rocks TV show, you know?
So, that's the very Zen-like attitude that you have to have, that your upbringing brought you to that point because that's what you need to get there.
Yes. So all the hardship in the Bronx of not having people, of not having this, of dealing with really things that can really change your life forever, like getting arrested for 30 years, I took that and I put it into Hollywood going, I don't really care. You know, not to care about the business, but I don't care what you think of me. I never did anyway. I don't care. If you don't like me, then leave. You know, I never really have problems with people. I like people, you know. I love being around people. So I've always had that mentality, and it kind of helped me, that strong, tough, hardcore upbringing brought me to Hollywood, made me thrive in this business, you know, because you couldn't break me. Still now you can't break me. People go, wow, you still talk about stuff that you talk about 20 years ago with the same passion. Yeah, because I love what I do. So it turned out to be my tough, hardcore upbringing benefited the rest of my life. Is that, right. You know?
Right.
And I'm so glad for my, I'm not going to say tragic upbringing, because it kind of was. We lost all our friends, all our family to either death or jail. You know, I'm so used to, it's, you know, I tell people, like, I grew up, me and you were buddies for, since we're 12. You get arrested or get killed or disappear. We don't sit around going, oh, where is he? You go, okay, boom, and you move on. So I have a thing where I could kind of separate. Does that make sense?
Like, I could be like, you had to deal with it.
Right, you had to. And I kind of took that in Hollywood because it was the same mentality where you're on a TV show for a year, your buddy's family with everyone, and then a week later, you never talk to them anymore.
That's right.
You know, you keep crew with one or two people, but you don't really keep crew with, you know, when you're on a TV show for a year, I've done so many series. I lived in Hawaii for a year. I did Sopranos, Entourage, 24. You know, you're on these shows and you make buddies with, let's go out to dinner. Let's go families. Let's go to parties. You go to events. And then the show gets canceled or you're off the show. You don't deal with these people anymore. You move to a next show. So you create a new family. It's almost like that in the Bronx. You know, people go to jail or get arrested. They disappear and you're on to the next crew. You know, and that was my life. So when I got here and I was on all these shows, I was able to disconnect. That's what I call it, disconnect. So I was able to go, okay, in the Bronx, okay, he got killed or he died of a drug overdose or he died of a fight. Okay, you disconnect and you keep moving on. Not that you don't think about those people, you don't have heart or compassion, but you don't dwell.
It's the same way in Hollywood, though, because people are like, right. It's so cold. It's like, yeah, I'm going to go to the next job. It's like, oh, yeah, Louis. Yeah, no, we're good friends, but you're going to go to the next job.
Exactly. And you don't really associate with half these people who you've done series with for a year and ate and loved and had children with their friends, and you have kids, they have kids, and you kind of grow up, and then one day you never talk again.
Yeah.
You know, so that was
that's
my life.
But yeah, but you got used to that.
But I grew up doing that, and then when I got here, it was the same thing, and I'm like, okay, I'm fine with this, you know? I'm fine with this. I can walk into a room and love 1,000 people, but leave and not have one friend. Does that make sense?
It does, because that's what you grew up with. I mean, that's what, you know, that's death. When you have to, when your relatives die, you can't talk to them anymore. And that's what you miss the most, is the conversation. And that's tough. You know, it's almost like, you know, New York fast tracks you for life. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. But I look at some of the guys that I came out with and they didn't have the mental toughness. I call mental toughness, and it's a Vince Lombardi quote, I'm not going to steal it, but mental toughness is essential to success. Without mental toughness, you have nothing. No matter how good a shape you're in, no matter how great you are, if your mind can't go further than the body, your mind will, you will fail. And your mind has to be stronger than anything that you have, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, it's, yeah.
And that's the way I lived my entire life. And I'm always an entrepreneur. I've always wanted to do things. Even when I first got out, I had all these guys around me. And I'd be like, hey, man, let's open up these pizzerias. Let's open up this pizza company. No, man. No, I'm an actor. No, I'm an actor. I go, what does that mean? You need other revenues. You need other source. What do you mean? They're like, no. And most of the guys, I would say not most, but 99.9% of them are gone. They were Strasbourg actors, next to be the next Brad Pitt, next to be the next massive stars. None of them hit because they didn't have the mental toughness. They had the chops of acting. They can sit in a room and act because they went to Strasbourg. They went to this. They went to, but the mental toughness is essential to success in any business you do. You're in a pizza business. If you're failing, you've got to be mentally tough to hang in there.
Let's get into that now. Tell me about your business that you leveraged off. You got your face on there. You know, it looks great. Tell me about your pasta, your Italian food business.
Well, when I created the brand, it was more about bringing families back to the dinner table. You know, when I grew up in the Bronx, everybody would sit together. You know, we had kids that were massive thugs and this and homeless kids. We would always sit around my dinner table. My mother would take every kid in. So we would always be around a table with 5-6 guys, not just Sundays, every day. You know, my mother cooked for all of us, and we had a lot of wayward kids that would be with us, you know.
What'd she cook?
Everything. My mother was a great cook. I tell her now she's terrible.
Italian. She cooked everything, but she's mainly Italian.
Yeah. Mainly Italian, yeah.
My ex, I won't say her last name, but her name was Eva Marie, and her last name ended in a vowel. And every Christmas we have so much Italian food, it was the best.
Yeah, and that's the way I grew up. Every day, though, not just holidays. Every day we did that. I grew up with three women brought me up, my mother, my grandmother, my aunt, and you know, so I was always in the kitchen. I was always learning. We had no men around. They were all dead or in jail. And all the women, I was just brought up by all women. you know, and I think that
so was maybe, Louis, I think we're kindred spirits. I had to sleep in the same room with my grandmother until I was 9 years old. My sister thought she was my mother, and my mom was like, she was like a cross between Anne Bancroft and Don Rickles. Go on. So your mom taught you how to.
But that's the truth. I lived with my other grandmother. I lived on her pull-out bed when I was seven to eight years old. And my mother, yeah, until we got that apartment I was just telling you about, where we're at 42 years, I lived in 8 different places. My mother was saying that. And one of them was my grandmother's pull-out bed in this basement apartment in the Bronx.
Talk about mental toughness. She's the one that got you mentally tough, right?
Yes. Even my other grandmother, who was like the general, she was hardcore. My
on
other
your dad's side or your mom's side?
My mom's mother.
Okay.
She looked like Sophia Loren. She was a boss. I mean, she was the toughest woman I've ever been around. And she was like, she didn't play, but she was great. She was great to us. She would cook for 20 of us every holiday, every weekend we would go to her house. If it wasn't my mother, it was my grandmother's. So, and she was a boss. She was like straight up. She was a street woman. She was tough, like the toughest woman you've ever met. Guys were afraid of her, but beautiful. Looked like a supermodel back then, like Sophia Loren she looked like. But I would always be around her. She was the best grandma. She was the best person ever. She taught me the mental toughness of life. She was in jail. My mother was in an orphanage. You know, so they were hardcore, my grandmother. And when I would sit with her as a kid, I would watch her cooking. And she would be like, I don't get, like, she was hardcore street person. And so I learned as a kid, this is how you have to be. And I watched her, and thank God, because she kind of embedded that tough mentality in my mind and the food world. So growing up, I would run alone. All we did was cook. So when I got to LA, I realized, like I would do, I told you I had that house. I would have everybody come and cook. I always wanted that environment. And as the years passed, like up until recently now, how I went to Food Line, you know, people came to me and said, hey, man, you're a great ambassador. Everyone remembers you cooking in their houses. And everybody remembered me cooking back in the day. And they were like, we want to launch this food line with you. We think you're great at it. My philosophy now is there's no more sitting around the dinner table with kids. Today's parenting is, here's an iPhone. Here's McDonald's. Shut the fuck up. I worked all day. Is the mentality of parenting. And I'm like, wow, no one sits around the table. So my food line, I said, when I do this food line, I want it to be bringing families back to the dinner table. You know, it's a lost art. So as I started doing that, I've done a ton of press. The Hollywood Reporter, the front page. I was on 3 times with my food line.
What's the name of the brand again?
Lombardi's.
Lombardi's.
Lombardi's, yeah. And as I started developing the brand, I started realizing, wow, no one does this. Like, no one sits at the table. So all the press I started doing started loving it. Started going, this is a movement, Louis. We need to have families sit back down because, you know, you're feeding them fast food, which is garbage, makes them kids feel terrible anyway. Then you're giving them an iPad and they're staring at it. So mentally they're feeling terrible. Physically they're feeling terrible because you're giving them food and they have no outlet to express to their parents because parents are so, I got to work. I don't want to hear your problems. But you have to. That's why you have kids. You know, I'm with my daughter all the time. I cook with her every night.
Every night you cook.
Every night.
You're a foodie.
Yeah, I cook every night. I tell my girlfriend, I want to sit home and cook. I enjoy it. It's healthier. It's my mental stability. It makes
you get excited. Do you get excited to cook? To have the
I'm already excited to make my pizzas tonight and my stuff.
You make a pizza tonight?
I make my own doughs, dude. I make my own doughs with the fresh yeast, everything. I go to all certain places.
Every Friday night, my wife makes pizza for us.
Yeah, I make my own doughs, and my daughter comes, and but they're all pain in the asses. My daughter don't like mushrooms. My girlfriend don't like meat. This one don't like this. And I sit there going, so now I find myself making 3 different things. Going, okay, I'll separate this. I don't like a
pizza. What are you going to eat tonight? What are you going to have?
Well, I make these great doughs. I make the dough with the special flour, and I use the fresh live yeast. You smell the whole building up.
A lot of garlic.
Tonight I'm thinking about making a clam pizza.
Oh, I've had it. I love it.
Come on. That's one of my specials. But I make 50 different kinds of pizzas. I make broccoli. You know broccoli rob is? Broccoli rob, the bit of broccoli. It's the Italian broccoli.
Yeah, with lemon.
Yeah, so what I do is I roll it up in calzones.
Oh, really? Nice. It's fresh.
And my girlfriend loves it. I saute the broccoli rob in garlic and oil, and then I take it out, I drain it, and then I roll up in the calzones. But I like the sausage in the broccoli rob. That's an old Italian dish. They put on the semolina bread in the Bronx and some broccoli rob and sausage. But my girlfriend, don't eat sausage. You don't eat this. So I got to
watch it. You got to watch it. Tonight, she makes me cauliflower pizza.
That's good. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I don't have the crust, you know.
I don't mind the crust. What I do mind is I use the almond cheese now from Trader Joe's.
Okay.
The almond cheese.
I bet the Newark people are going to hear this and they're going to.
I would get hit in the head with a lead pipe. I'm going to get hit in the head. Thanks for setting me up for that, bro. But anyway, so yeah, when I make my doughs, I actually make like 7 or 8 of them and I keep them in the freezer. And yeah. I have my olive oils of basil, garlic. And so I flavor the bags. I seal the bags and I put them in the freezer. So when you take a dough out, it's got that season of basil, garlic, oil, truffle, whatever I flavor it. And that's how it takes 20 minutes to thaw out the dough. So I can make pizza every day. And I use the Cento tomatoes, the Italian tomatoes. I'm actually going
to
Chicago.
Real deal here. This is like, you're like throwing out all this stuff.
Oh, yeah. I love it, though. See, to me, it's not like, I'm trying to. I love it. Like, I love it. I want to sit with. When my food line goes, I want to do a kids charity where I go to these orphanages and these groups of homes, and I'm cooking for these kids. A lot of my proceeds from Lombardi's Foods will go to single mom charities, will go to some of these young kids who have nothing. I'll go cook for them myself. I will eat with them.
Have you cooked for the homeless? You cooked for in L.A. or New York when you cooked for the homeless?
No. I want to set up when the food line goes for kids charities. You know, I want to help kids. You know, it's like, to me, you know, kids can't help themselves. Homeless people can or whatever. Not that I don't have a heart for people like that. Yeah. But I'm just saying it's become kids have no choice when you're 13, 14, 15.
Sure.
You know, and that's what I want to do. The proceeds, a lot of the stuff that I do from Lombardi's Foods is going to go back to kids and help kids, like, you know, eat and stuff.
What's the next gig for you? What are you working on?
I just did The Rock's new TV show called The Young Rock, coming out on NBC. I play a pizzeria owner. The Rock hired me. I flew to Australia last month. I was there for 3 weeks. I shot the first 3 episodes of The Rock. You know, it's kind of a fun little recurring role. It's not a massive show like I was Sopranos or other, but it's a great show. I'm a part of The Rock's life. The Rock is amazing. You know, his show is going to be amazing. It's about wrestling, and he has like Andre the Giant and Ric Flair and the Samoan Brothers. These are guys who brought him up. I had no idea when I got there. I'm like, wow, I was so fat because I grew up with remember WrestleMania and stuff? Yeah. You know, I used to go to them, you know, and I, when
oh,
I got
you're
there,
a wrestling fan.
I was, yeah. And I when I got there, I'm like, oh my God, is that uncle? He goes, yeah, these are all the people that were like his uncle who brought him up. And I was like, fascinated. And I loved The Rock. And The Rock ended up hiring me in the whim. He liked me. His production company hired me, flew me to Australia to shoot one day. I shot 3 episodes in one day. I was there 2
You know,
weeks.
I think that might be your strong suit. It might not be the toughness. You're just a likable guy. I'm looking at you right now. I want to hang out with you. I mean, this could go on. Louis, this interview can go on for hours. You're the reason why I'm doing the podcast like this. I wanted to. You ever see the Broadway Danny Rose?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, in the beginning of the podcast, I tell why am I doing a podcast? Because I would love to sit at the table and be with those guys in Broadway and Carnegie Deli and just hang out with those guys. You know, I used to do stand-up comedy. Comedians would get together until 3 o'clock in the morning. You're a guy that when I sit at the table, I would love to sit at the table. I could sit at a table with you in a deli until 4 o'clock in the morning and be totally satisfied. It's like sitting at the craps table. And I think that might be your strong suit. People like Oliver Stone, he didn't even make you do an audition. He just said, right. I like this guy.
Right. And that's been my career. Most of my roles I have gotten by that. Even The Rock, I didn't audition. They just called me up and said, we want you on the show. And I was like, it's a joke. And they were like, no.
It doesn't happen.
They were like, The Rock wants you on. I didn't meet anyone until I showed up in Australia. I got to set and I met everyone that day. And they were like, we loved you, Louis. We loved you. I'm like, really? I didn't audition. I didn't meet anyone. I just showed up. They sent me a plane ticket to Australia. I got to Australia. I'm like, where is everybody? I didn't meet anyone for 3 weeks. I show up to one day to work and everyone was like, oh my God, Louis. Hi. I was like, holy cow. Like, holy cow.
You're like the Forrest Gump of acting.
Yeah.
Just happened for you.
And it turned out to be, like, again, I didn't meet anyone. They just called. I thought it was a joke at first. You want to be on The Rock, recurring on The Rock show. I was like, yeah, where do I got to go? They're like, oh, you got to go to Australia. I thought I had to go to, like, the audition of a Zoom. Nothing. They sent me they go take a COVID test at Universal. I mean, okay. I went that day. I swabbed. I went. They're like, okay, you're clear. 2 days later, I was on a first-class plane, like, on my way to Australia. I'm going, okay, this is crazy. You know, this is crazy. And I get to Australia, I quarantine for 2 weeks, and then I get out and I'm like, I still haven't met a soul, bro. Let me remind you. I'm in Australia now going, is this like, this has to be real, because now I'm here. And again, I show up to the set one day and everybody was like, Louis, hey, we love you, we hide you, Rock loves you. I was like, okay, this is real. I get behind the counter playing the uncle, the pizza dude. I had a bunch of laughs. They were great. The showrunners, the people, everyone was amazing. I felt like I was there for 10 years. And the day was over. They're like, okay, back. It took me 24 hours to go each way, quarantine for 2 weeks for one day's work. And I love it. And I would go back again, man. The Rock's people are great. The show's going to be great. It's interesting. I was fascinated with it because I didn't know about it. So it turns out that was my last job, which was a month ago.
When's the show come out?
Next week. Have you seen commercials?
Yeah. Where can we see it?
NBC. Network.
NBC. NBC. So NBC, next week, what night? What night to come out?
I don't know, but the commercials have been coming on. The commercials are pretty cool. I have no idea.
So we got to look out for that.
I don't really follow stuff, but so, yeah, The Young Rock.
The Young Rock.
On NBC, The Young Rock.
Okay. On NBC.
Yeah, and it's on NBC. So I did that, and my show, The Small Time, it's called, the one about my life story, is on the fast track. I've been working, I have a meeting with the showrunner in an hour and a half to create the pitch for our show with MGM about my life growing up. That was the earlier conversation we had about my life. We're doing that with MGM, so we're about to go out and pitch it in a month. I'm the creator, executive producer. I'll be on as a recurring role. I'll play one of my family members on the show.
I'm rooting for you big time on that.
Thanks, buddy. And we'll go back to New York and we'll shoot it with my friends and my family and in New York City. So we're working on that. And I'm also now launching a frozen pizza line. I'm going to Chicago at the end of the month before we go pitch. I go to Chicago at the end of the month and I develop one of the biggest frozen pizza companies in the world. Biggest. They're like the biggest. And I brought my concept for Lombardi's Food Pizzas to them. And they love it. Love, love, love it. They're like, this is going to be great. So I'm actually working on developing the product with them and see where it goes from there. You know, we have like QVC interested, majorly interested. We have a lot of places. So this pizza company loves it. That's what they do. They're like one of the biggest in the country. And they love the product. They're like, well, we got to get this going. I'm flying out there at the end of the month developing the product. And hopefully we can get that on store shelves in the next 6 to 8 months. And we're going to do QVC with it as well. Because QVC, they like me and my mom and my daughter dynamic because it's all women and family. And that's right up my... I'm a family guy. I love women. Like you know, I'm brought up by my mom. I was like, that's my world. And I was blessed because I was brought up by all women and I had a daughter.
How old's your daughter?
14.
I got two daughters. I got a 14-year-old daughter also.
Oh, really? It's the best. I always tell her, I play around when I'm watching football, I'm like, man, I wish I had a boy. She hates him. She's like, stop saying that, man, if he would be watching football with me. And she's all nasty with me. But God bless me with a daughter because I'm brought up all women. It taught me how to treat women and be around women. And my daughter, you know, it's kind of like all those lessons in life. Well, again, almost like my upbringing in Hollywood, like the street life to make me mentally tough for Hollywood. I was brought up by all women to make me understand to raise my daughter.
Yeah, no, totally. I get that big time.
I love that you got two daughters. That's so great, dude. I love that. That's, to me, that's everything, the family. And what I want to do is have people like you go, let's get Lombardi's Food. Let's sit with our kids. Put your phones away. Let's talk about how we made this pizza. How was school? I ask my daughter every day, and when I get in the car with her, how was school? How are your friends? I ask her a million questions. Most parents don't want to hear shit. I do. I love it. When I went to school, I put it this way. I went to her school, and I spoke at the drama thing for them. Okay, to these kids. Now these are like 10-year-old kids. This is a few years ago, right? Yeah. I got a card from signed by every kid in the class saying you were great. This was this. Oh my God! The teacher was like, "Can you come back? These kids won't stop talking about you." Because I got up like talking to you. I wasn't like so. I was like, "Yeah, you do wrong shit. You're going to jail." Yeah,
you do. Do you get like that with your daughter? I get like that because you know my story growing up was. My grandmother escaped the Russian concentration camps. So she would like say, you should be, you know, if I got out of line or something, like, you're lucky to be alive. You know, you go right towards the worst thing possible. And I'm saying to my kids, they're almost desensitized. They're like, yeah, we've heard it all before.
That's me. You know what happens if you do drugs? You die. She's like, oh my God. Yes.
Yeah.
And I tell her, I go, you know, I grew up in a tough place and you sit here on your fucking iPhone dilly-dally and I had a fucking struggle for that shit. And she's like, oh God, you know? And I tell her, I go, and it's crazy as it may seem, I go, you know, when I die, you got to move on. You can't just sit around and be missing me. He's like, dude, I feel like the lunatic. And she's like, why do you say that? I go, because eventually I will die. Everyone dies, but we don't go into we don't go in reverse in life. You still go forward. You miss us, yes, but you don't crumble. I try to teach her my mental toughness, and she's getting, like, you know, life goes on, right or wrong, dude. We're here for a time. We enjoy what we do. Let me tell you something. I thank God. I thank everything, whatever, that I've had the most blessed life. I went from the streets with the biggest people to Hollywood with the biggest people, and I still walk sweatpants on, my t-shirt. I don't care. I could walk into any place and be accepted anywhere. And I don't take it for granted. I appreciate every second of my street life to my Hollywood life. And I kind of tell people, life, when great things happen and bad things happen, because good thing, when things happen now, my girlfriend's like, you don't get so excited. I go, because life is a steady line. You don't want the ups to be two ups and the down to be two down.
Yes.
If you do this the whole life, great things happen, yay. Bad things happen, okay. And you just keep moving because everything flushes. Good things happen, bad things happen. Good things happen, bad things happen. It's just staying even keel in life. And my girlfriend's biggest thing is you never get so, you get calls from like major studios saying they want to do, and you just go, okay, this is great. You talk to people. Even my lawyer and my MGM people, they're like, Louis, and this is why I think I'm they're like, you know, we've never been around someone like you. Like when people drop out and bad things happen, you don't curse these people. You don't get mad. You just keep moving. And now we're at the point we have the top people. I go, yeah, but why? You know, what's it going to help? It's only going to bring negativity to a project. It's only going to be negativity to our personalities. And they're like, we've never been around people like you. MGM said now, I got the executives there calling all these major people going, you got to work with this guy. This guy's the easiest person to work with. He's so even keel. And I'm like, they're saying it to get other people involved. And I meet with them and they don't want to be involved anyway. But it's kind of like they saw that mentality of not me not going, fuck that guy. He bailed out. No, the hell with him. I'm like, no. Maybe he had a better opportunity. Maybe this is better off for us. You know, life is always a little wheel of what happens next. Again, I always do this to my daughter, you know?
That's right. People get caught up in relationships too, because a lot of personal growth world will talk about that. We say, you know, relationships are not like up and down. So because you're trying to go for those highs, a nice even keel, you know, a good steady relationship is a little bit of a variation of a straight line.
Yeah, life is a straight line, dude.
Yeah.
You know, and you just keep being happy, positive, and appreciate everything. If it's the bad, appreciate that bad, because when it's good, it's going to be great. You know what I'm saying? You know, and anything, you have a business that fails, that don't mean you're a failure. It means you're still a success because why? You've tried something. You went out and you put your neck on the line and then you get onto another one. You learn from your failures. You learn from those mistakes. That's me, you know. I try not to harp on stuff that you have no more control over. You just learn. Everything, life is a learning thing. That's my life. I didn't go to school. Life is my learning stone, you know. And my girl, fun of me because I wear my sweatpants and my t-shirt. Like, oh, dress up, put on something nice. I go, nope, I like this. If people like me, they like me. They don't like you, they don't like you. And I go, I could go anywhere. I can go to the biggest nightclub in Vegas with shorts and slippers on. Even people, when I used to go to these clubs, people would be like, Shaquille couldn't get in last week with slippers. How are you even in here? You're nice to people. People like you. You'll be respectful to people. You know, don't use people I can get into the club. No, if I like you, I like you. If I don't, you'll never see me. I know guys worth $500 million I won't stay near because they're miserable with their lives, you know? And I know guys that have no money, the penniless, that will help you to the end of the earth. And those are the people I'd stay with. And it don't matter what you're wearing, what you have. It matters what's in your heart and your mind. You know, I try to tell people that. My girlfriend's like, oh, put on nice bag. I don't care. I walk around with the fucking sweatpants on and I'm happy. You know, and I've been doing it my whole life. And again, look what my life has been. I've had the most blessed, fortunate life in both worlds, though. As that criminal world, we were on top. When I got to LA, I became kind of on top in a way, you know? And again, I never go, oh, I know this guy, I know that guy. No, okay, I just work with The Rock. He's great for hiring me. I love that, and I believe that he believed in me, and I'm appreciative. That's it, you know, and I move on. Now I'm on to the other show, and I'm on to the frozen pizza line. You just keep swimming upstream, you know? And well, whatever happens.
The old man used to say, chip away day to day.
Chip away day to day, even if it's 1 inch, I love that. I love that. Exactly. Chip away day to day. I love that because it's so true. 1 inch is better than going backward 2 inches or half an inch. You know, and each day you go forward more toward your dreams and your goals. And once you stop, people get discouraged, whether it's business failing, whether it's life, relationships. I look at stuff like, okay, you have a relationship, it fails. Okay, that person's not bad. Maybe it's just not meant for you. You know, a business, you start a business, it fails. Not everyone's successful, but you learn from those failures, create the next business that you know the failures that made you fail. And you learn. Everything is a learning thing. And, you know, and don't treat people when you're successful like you wouldn't if you weren't successful. I'll treat everybody the same. Unless they're assholes or they're scumbags to you, then you have a then you kind of turn your back or you do. You don't have to fight with everybody. You don't have to, you just move on. You keep moving forward, you know? And that's in business and in life.
Amen. Amen. This has been thoroughly enjoyable.
Thank you, man. I appreciate me too, man. I feel like we're back. I feel like me and you are eating a bagel in the Bronx together with a slice of pizza. I love it. It's great.
You know, this can't be episode together. We're going to have you come back, you know,
and
talk about what you're doing lately. We're going to have to talk about some New York stories, and we're going to have to talk again. So I think this is Louis' first episode, I think, because there's too much more to talk
one
about.
One of many. Yeah, one of many, man. This is a great conversation. This is easy. This is what I see like what you and I are doing. This is what I miss about New York. You know, we used to sit in the social clubs and talk with everybody and eat a slice of pizza and bullshit and bust each other's balls. You know, let me tell you, I've done so many podcasts. This is like the most like personal one, like where it's not just about whatever. It's more like fun and talking about the old school and what's right, your parents and your dad and the bra. I love that. To me.
I knew this was going to happen when I started talking to you. I said, oh, I know where this is going to go. I kind of knew it before because I grew up around, you know, my whole family, you know, was like yelling and screaming in the house, you know.
And exactly.
Like
everybody says, why are you accent.
I knew how it was going to be. But I will tell you, about 5-6 years ago, I'm in Connecticut at my wife's parents' house. They're from Jersey, but they're Polish Catholic descent. I'm sitting there. She goes, my brother wants to take you to the Polish social club. They're going to do duck pin bowling. I said, I don't know what that is, but I'll hang out with them. I go there. It was a holiday dinner. They get all the Italian food, and then there's desserts. And he's like, yeah, his girlfriend over here made this, and his wife over there made that, and they got the calzones over there. The rest is from the place. But then, you know, girlfriends and boyfriends are wearing hockey shirts. You don't know who the girl and guy is. This is a really tough place. You know what I'm saying? I come home smelling like smoke. The drinks were like $2.25. Real Jack, real Coke. I was like, this is crazy. There's smoke everywhere. But you know, it's a private place. I come home. I said, I could have done a gambling place because I was a nightclub promoter. I could have done a gambling place. If that place was in L.A., it was the most fun I had. It was a social club. And that's the kind of New York kind of story place. And that's why you and I enjoy talking to each other the way we do, because right. That kind of atmosphere
yes.
Doesn't happen enough.
Right, and I grew up in the social clubs. That's what we did. We all hung out. We all ate together. We all bullshitted each other, gambled, played cards, played the football games, you know? Yeah, and that's what we did. I love it. It's like, me and you should start a social club. We should do a podcast, a social club. That'd be funny.
That might be the bifurcated version of what we're doing here today. But I wanted to let you know that I thoroughly enjoy this. We're going to have to put your links in the podcast notes for your food line that you already got, for your pizza that's coming out. For the Young Rock that's coming out next week.
Yeah.
Oh, this launches in March of 2021, so that'll be already in the works. But I thank you, and I'm looking forward to talking to you on the next one.
Thank you so much, man. This has been absolutely great, man. It's like I feel like it was a throwback to like old school New York kind of Bronx kind of vibes. I love it. This was great. This was a unique podcast, man. I'm so glad I did it. I'm glad I finally got to meet you. And let's do it again whenever you want. You just hit me up and let's talk about whatever we want to do next. You know.
Thank you. Thank you. You make me thank feel you. like I was home again.
Yeah. Same here.
Thanks, man.
Great, Mike. I'll talk to you soon. Anytime you want, just hit me up. I'm always around. All right, buddy.
Thank you. Likewise. You too.
Thanks, pal. Talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Louis Lombardi, my new friend. I think he's just getting started. I think we're going to see more of this guy, because with that personality, people are going to want to continue to work with him. And that's a lesson to be learned, kids. Watch his attitude. It'll come to you, because people want to be around positive people, happy people like Louis. All right. If you want to find out more about our show, go to longshotleaders.com. If you want to be a part of something special and get your daily dose of inspiration, perspiration, exasperation, knowledge, and creativity, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to our podcast. And if you like what we do, share our show with your family and your friends, and put some positivity out there in the world. Thank you for listening. And until we meet again on the next episode, I bid you adieu. Where did I get French from?
Things happen now. My girlfriend's like, you don't get so excited. I go, because life is a steady line. You don't want the ups to be two ups and the down to be two down.
Yes.
If you do this the whole life, great things happen. Yay. Bad things happen. Okay. And you just keep moving because everything flushes. Good things happen, bad things happen. Good things happen, bad things happen. It's just staying even keel in life. And my girlfriend's biggest thing is you never get so, you get calls from like major studios saying they want to do, and you just go, okay, this is great. And you talk to people. Even my lawyer and my MGM people, they're like, Louis, when this is why I think I'm, they're like, you know, we've never been around someone like you. Like when people drop out and bad things happen, you don't curse these people. You don't get mad. You just keep moving. And now we're at the point, we have the top people. I go, yeah, but why? You know, what's it going to help? It's only going to bring negativity to a project. It's only going to be negativity to our personalities. And they're like, we've never been around people like you, MGM said. Now I got the executives there calling all these major people going, you got to work with this guy. This guy's the easiest person to work with. He's so even keel. And I'm like, they're saying it to get other people involved. And I meet with them and they don't want to be involved anyway. But it's kind of like they saw that mentality of not me not going, fuck that guy. He bailed out. No, the hell with him. I'm like, no. Maybe he had a better opportunity. Maybe this is better off for us. You know, life is always a little wheel of what happens next. Again, I always do this to my daughter, you know?
That's right. People get caught up in relationships too, because a lot of personal growth world will talk about that. To say, you know, relationships are not like up and down. So because you're trying to go for those highs, a nice even keel, you know, a good steady relationship is a little bit of a variation of a straight line.
Yeah, life is a straight line, dude.
Yeah.
You know, and you just keep being happy, positive, and appreciate everything. If it's the bad, appreciate that bad, because when it's good, it's going to be great. You know what I'm saying? You know, and anything, you have a business that fails, that don't mean you're a failure. It means you're still a success, because why? You've tried something. You went out and you put your neck on the line, and then you get on to another one. You learn from your failures. You learn from those mistakes. That's me, you know. I try not to harp on stuff that you have no more control over. You just learn. Everything. Life is a learning thing. That's my life. I didn't went to school. Life is my learning stone, you know. And my girl made fun of me because I wear my sweatpants and my t-shirt's like, oh, dress up, put on something nice. I go, nope, I like this. If people like me, they like me. They don't like you, they don't like you. And I go, I could go anywhere. I can go to the biggest nightclub in Vegas with shorts and slippers on. Even people, when I used to go to these clubs, people would be like, Shaquille couldn't get in last week with slippers. How are you even in here? You're nice to people. People like you. You'll be respectful to people. You know, don't use people for, I can get into the club. No, if I like you, I like you. If I don't, you'll never see me. I know guys worth $500 million I won't stay near because they're miserable with their lives, you know? And I know guys that have no money, the penniless, that will help you to the end of the earth. And those are the people I'd stay with. And it don't matter what you're wearing, what you have. It matters what's in your heart and your mind. You know, I try to tell people that. My girlfriend's like, oh, put on nice bags. I don't care. I walk around with the fucking sweatpants on and I'm happy. You know, and I've been doing it my whole life. And again, look what my life has been. I've had the most blessed, fortunate life in both worlds, though. As that criminal world, we were on top. When I got to LA, I became kind of on top in a way, you know? And again, I never go, oh, I know this guy, I know that guy. No, okay, I just work with The Rock. He's great for hiring me. I love that, and I believe that he believed in me, and I'm appreciative. That's it. You know, and I move on. Now I'm on to the other show, and I'm on to the frozen pizza line. You just keep swimming upstream, you know? And whatever happens.
The old man used to say, chip away day to day.
Chip away day to day, even if it's 1 inch. I love that. I love that. Exactly. Chip away day to day. I love that because it's so true. 1 inch is better than going backward 2 inches or half an inch. You know, and each day you go forward more toward your dreams and your goals. And once you stop, people get discouraged, whether it's business failing, whether it's life, relationships. I look at stuff like, okay, you have a relationship, it fails. Okay, that person's not bad. Maybe it's just not meant for you. You know, a business, you start a business, it fails. Not everyone's successful, but you learn from those failures, create the next business that you know the failures that made you fail. And you learn. Everything is a learning thing. And, you know, and don't treat people when you're successful like you wouldn't if you weren't successful. I'll treat everybody the same. Unless they're assholes or they're scumbags to you, then you have a then you kind of turn your back or you don't. You don't have to fight with everybody. You don't have to, you just move on. You keep moving forward, you know? And that's in business and in life.
Amen. Amen. This has been thoroughly enjoyable.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Me too, man. I feel like we're back. I feel like me and you are eating a bagel in the Bronx together with a slice of pizza. I love it. It's great.
You know, this can't be episode together. We're going to have you come back, you know,
you want.
And talk about what you're doing lately. We're going to have to talk about some New York stories, and we're going to have to talk again. So I think this is Louis's first episode, I think, because there's too much more to talk
one
about.
One of many. Yeah, one of many, man. This is a great conversation. This is easy. This is what I see like what you and I are doing. This is what I miss about New York. You know, we used to sit in the social clubs and talk with everybody and eat a slice of pizza and bullshit and bust each other's balls. You know, let me tell you something. I've done so many podcasts. This is like the most like personal one, like where it's not just about whatever. It's more like fun and talking about the old school and what's right, your parents and your dad and LeBron. I love that. To me.
I knew this was going to happen when I started talking to you. I said, oh, I know where this is going to go. I kind of knew it before because I grew up around, you know, my whole family, you know, was like yelling and screaming in the house, you know.
Exactly.
Like
everybody says, why are you accent.
I knew how it was going to be. But I will tell you, about 5-6 years ago, I'm in Connecticut at my wife's parents' house. They're from Jersey, but they're Polish Catholic descent. I'm sitting there. She goes, my brother wants to take you to the Polish social club. They're going to do duck pin bowling. I said, I don't know what that is, but I'll hang out with them. I go there. It was a holiday dinner. They get all the Italian food, and then there's desserts. And he's like, yeah, his girlfriend over here made this, and his wife over there made that, and they got the calzones over there. The rest is from the place. But then, you know, girlfriends and boyfriends are wearing hockey shirts. You don't know who the girl and guy is. This is a really tough place. You know what I'm saying? I come home smelling like smoke. The drinks were like $2.25. Real Jack, real Coke. I was like, this is crazy. There's smoke everywhere. It's a private place. I come home. I said, I could have done a gambling place because I was a nightclub owner. I could have done a gambling place. If that place was in L.A., it was the most fun I had. It was a social club. And that's the kind of New York kind of story place. And that's why you and I enjoy talking to each other the way we do, because
right.
That kind of atmosphere is
yes.
Doesn't happen enough.
Right, and I grew up in a social club. That's what we did. We all hung out. We all ate together. We all bullshit and just gamble, play cards, but the football games, you know? Yeah, and that's what we did. I love it. It's like me and you should start a social club. We should do a podcast, a social club. That'd be funny.
That might be the bifurcated version of what we're doing here today, but I wanted to let you know that I thoroughly enjoy this. We're going to have to put your links in the podcast notes for your food line that you already got, for your pizza that's coming out. For the Young Rock that's coming out next week.
Yeah.
Well, this launches in March of 2021, so that'll be already in the works. But I thank you, and I'm looking forward to talking to you on the next one.
Thank you so much, man. This has been absolutely great, man. It's like I feel like it was a throwback to like old school New York kind of Bronx kind of vibes. I loved it. This was great. This was a unique podcast, man. I'm so glad I did it. I'm glad I finally got to meet you. And let's do it again whenever you want. You just hit me up and let's talk about whatever we want to do next. You know.
Thank you. Thank you. You make me thank feel you. like I was home again.
Yeah. Same here.
Thanks, man.
Great, Mike. I'll talk to you soon. Anytime you want, just hit me up. I'm always around. All right, buddy.
Thank you. Likewise, you too.
Thanks, pal. Talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Louis Lombardi, my new friend. I think he's just getting started. I think we're going to see more of this guy. Because with that personality, people are going to want to continue to work with him. And that's a lesson to be learned, kids. Watch his attitude. It'll come to you because people want to be around positive people, happy people like Louis. All right. If you want to find out more about our show, go to longshotleaders.com. If you want to be a part of something special and get your daily dose of inspiration, perspiration, exasperation, knowledge, and creativity, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to our podcast. And if you like what we do, share our show with your family and your friends, and put some positivity out there in the world. Thank you for listening. And until we meet again on the next episode, I bid you adieu. Where did I get French from?